Okay, today is February 21st. We're taping a class called Moshe, the character of Moshe. And we are going to discuss today his relationship with his brother Aharon. Moshe's relationship with his brother Aharon. Now, Aharon and Moshe represent two very different types of leadership. Both are necessary. It would appear from some of the Midrashim of describing Moshe's conversation with God at the burning bush that Aharon's role in assisting Moshe was something that was vidyevet. It was not something that was meant to happen at the outset, but that because of Moshe's objections, Aharon was put into the picture. I would like to show by today's presentation that this is not necessarily so, even according to these midrashim. What in Midrashim are we talking about? That we discussed, we wrote on the board already Moshe's objections. We wrote five different objections, right? Who am I? What's his name? What's your name? Speak well. All those, they're not going to believe me. He has a lot of apprehension, right? And the picture created by the Midrashim, certainly by Rashi, is that Moshe's apprehension, besides his own limitations, right? I don't speak well, I don't know the language so well, I'm too humble to do this, all his personal limitations, that what stands behind his apprehension is that my brother deserves this honor more than I do. Not just that he's older than I am, but he's been in the scene all these years. Who am I? Is Johnny come late and take it over? I know that my brother has... So look, he was not a youngster when he left. He was about 20, let's say, the Medrash says. Another Medrash says he was 40. But he was well aware that Aharon was a Bar Kochi. He was someone who's out there. And why are you giving me this role and not to another? That is not fabrication out of a fanciful quite considerate kind of kapara for Bereshis, where younger brothers don't seem to share this sentiment of caring about how their older brother is going to feel about their usurping their position, right? I don't get a picture that Hevel was too upset about his position as God's favored, right? Does Yitzchak try to make amends with Yishmael or Yaakov with Esav or Yosef with his brothers? You know, things just get out of hand with the older brothers in Bereshis. And here comes Moshe to fix that. It starts with Ephraim and Menashe, where Ephraim seems to be pushed ahead of Menashe almost arbitrarily, right? Nothing in the text indicates why Ephraim should be favored over Menashe. But it's just like, okay, this is safer Bereshis, where younger brothers are always prevailing. So I'm putting Ephraim before Menashe. And only Yosef complains about it, and Menashe doesn't. So Menashe plays a very important role in the fixing of Sefer Bereishis. And it continues with these two brothers. I have a younger brother who is given this chance of great gedula, right? But he insists, at least the way the Medrash presents it, that I want my older brother to have some share in this. And here is why what I'm telling you now, it seems to be the ikur pshat. What do I mean? Is that in the middle of this discussion, Hashem tells Moshe, I've already told you about it. He's coming out to meet you. There's a dispute whether Aharon was spoken to before Moshe. Because if Aharon is already coming out to greet Moshe from Egypt, right? He's on his way, right? And even if Moshe was spoken to God for a week, Aharon got the message first. I'm going to talk to your brother at a burning bush in 2 weeks. Start to make a trip. He's on his way. He's going to escort him back to Egypt. Okay? I'm going to say to Aharon, your brother is. I'm going to appear to your brother at a burning bush in 2 weeks. Go out to meet him and take him back to Egypt. Okay? So by God bringing in Aharon in the middle of Moshe's discussion. So Chazal used that as the license to say that Moshe's apprehension is because he feels his brother deserves some kind of historical credit as well. I want to do part of this mission. Okay, so let's open up the Shmos. God, just send someone else. Send the person you usually send. Right? Pasuk Gimel. And it says, Aaron. Shlach no biyad tishlach. What made Rashi feel that Moshe had Aaron in mind when he said these words? Don't send me. Send Aaron. Just look at the next passage. You with me? You get it? What makes Hashem mention Aaron out of nowhere? You get the chat again? Okay. He says, God, send, please do me a favor. Send the person you usually send. And Rashi says, that's, Moshe knows that's Aaron. How does Moshe know that? Or the sharper question is, what makes Rashi say that that's what Moshe is saying? Because the next pasuk it says, "Ve'yichar Hashem Moshe ve'yomer Halavah Aron Achicha Halevi." I know he'll be your spokesman, and you know what? He's on his way to meet you. In other words, it's the chatzila. I have Aron in mind. So calm down, people. No, you sure? Aron is part of this issue. All right. Now, do you remember when Moshe is saved by Paro's daughter? Remember when Moshe is saved by Paro's daughter? It says she opened up the basket. She sees me out there with the dream. She's like, who else is putting babies to save from her father's decree, right? And then she says, "Vihine na'ar bochen." Right? She saw a na'ar. And behold, Na'ar was crying. And what we said back then, that's Aaron crying. And Aaron is crying for his newborn brother. It's because otherwise, why is this child, this newborn child, called a Na'ar? Right? So what Chazal want to do between Aaron and Moshe is to create a unit. I say for a number of reasons. One, to fix sacred gracious. Right? Think Cain and Hebel. Think Yitzchak and Ishmael. Think Yaakov and Yitzchak. Think Yosef and his brothers. Right? Gracious seems to come to a resolution because of Ephraim and Manasseh here. The question is, what's going to happen with the next brother situation in the Torah? This is just this one. There's one more. Right? What's going to happen in the next brother situation? Is it going to be like the brothers of Horatius of old? Or is it going to be like the Ephraim and Manasseh model of two brothers that can, you know, work things through and get along? Right? So, Shmos is going to use every opportunity to show, no, these brothers are great together. They complement each other. They complete each other. One is not whole without the other. And there is very interesting syntactical way that the Tanakh does this. What do I mean by syntactical? Grammatical. What is the syntactical way that the Tanakh does this? Is that very often when you have verbs describing both Moshe and Aaron, this is what the Tanakh does. Vayetse Moshe v'Aaron, vayavo Moshe v'Aaron, vayushav Moshe v'Aaron. Okay, it's the Tanakh's way to syntactically say that there actually is one. Look, I think the Torah outright does this. It outright does this in Parshas Va'eloh, where the Torah describes the background of these people. Did you get that, Adam? Because usually when you have a plural subject, you have to have a plural verb. Those are singular verbs. Vayetzi, not vayetzu. That means that they're acting as one. Now, by the way, that's not always the way the drash goes. Right? Sometimes there's a syntactical anomaly, and the drash does this. For instance, does this sound familiar? Vayikach, shem vayefet et hasimlo, vayechasu et ervat avihem. Shem and Yefet took, you see the syntactical problem?
Should be
by Yechu, right? Vayikach, Shem, Vayefet. So there, Rashi goes a different direction. He doesn't say that the two of them were acting as one. Instead, he says, why is it singular? From the storyline itself. Noah wakes up from his drunkenness and only blesses the daylights out of Shem, and Yefet just comes along for the ride. Right? And it's not just because it's the descendants of Shem that's reading this text. Right? The descendants of Yefet were not given the Torah. Only the descendants of Shem. Right? But that's not enough. We're not looking for that kind of favoritism. But Yikach Shem Yefet implies, says Rashi, that only Shem was actually doing this, and Yefet just came in to give him a hand because he couldn't cover up himself. Right? You get it? So there are two ways to do this when you have the singular verb and the plural subject, is to say maybe only one of those was doing this, and the other was just coming on for the ride. Right? Which one would you say is this? Look at this one. Vayavo Noach v'ishto ubanav u'neshe banav al hateva. Yeah, they say that here. It really, you don't know anything of the righteousness of Noah's life and children. There are seven other people coming on the ark with him. Really, they're going on the ride for Noah. That's why it's their vote. Right? Rather than just say they all went on as one. How do I know? What does that mean? Like an action that they didn't know. Right? You see, when you have that discrepancy between the, if you want a darshan, if you want to say, why? The Torah is supposed to be syntactically consistent. Plural subject, it's a plural noun. Plural verb, it's a plural subject, it's a plural verb. Right? Okay, so there's no questions. Far and away, the two people who get the most when mentioned together, but this is just it's a plus one. There are no two people that even come close to Moshe and Aaron as a subject in the same place. You know what I'm saying? Moshe and Aaron are mentioned together in hundreds of
circles.
I should say hundreds, maybe about 100 circles. And we can make an exact statistic. How many get the plural verb? How many, but there are so many more where they get a singular verb than anything else.
Are there any other pairs of people that like are paired together?
Well, here's that Moshe and Kachshin, but yeah, that way, you know what I mean? We have.
But that had a positive, because that one was Shem Yefet, it was a negative.
Negative, yeah. Let's see. I can imagine it.
Does that mean that when it says Vayetz U Moshe Aharon, that they're not a singular entity there, or it's just grammatically, it's just not?
Yeah, I don't have to explain the expected. I have to explain the unexpected.
Right, but there may be reasons why when it says Vayetz U, it says Vayetz U and Vayetz. And if you're going to say, I guess that means that one, and then by its food, they're not one.
No, again, I don't have to explain the expected. I'm saying it doesn't necessarily mean that. Right? My job is to work on what's the unusual. You know, when it says Vayichan b'tachtis haharon, next week's parsha, Ke'ish echad b'lev echad, So you say Vayachanu, you know, Vayachanu b'midbar, not Vayichan b'midbar. Okay, so what I'd like to do now with Moshe and Aaron is to show that despite all of Moshe's objections and the theme that Rashi and the Midrashim like to build, that the objections are based upon his apprehension at being presented with this leadership that doesn't include his brother, and that because of that apprehension his brother was included, no. Simply not true. Moshe's mission to Bnei Yisrael would not have been complete if it was one that did not include his brother. I don't know if you hear when we did this, but remember that there are three stories involving Moshe with involvement of other people in Perek Bet, right? The first story involving Ish and Sri, Makev, Ish and Sri, right? And then there's Shnei Anashim Ivrim Nitzim, two Hebrews fighting, and then the Vayavo'u Haro'im Vayigor Shul, the daughters of Yisrael, right? Okay, so he gets the job done in these two, but here, when he sees the two Hebrews fighting, he says, Vayam Elo Rashalom, what's a Kereach? He didn't get a good response. He said, wait, are you a hypocrite? We heard you killed yesterday. And now you're calling me a Russia? You're telling me not to hit him? How dare someone who once killed tell another person not to hit? You've lost that moral high ground. So I'm not going to listen to you. Which is so despicable. It's so disgusting. Right? It means that you can't compartmentalize to say, I killed yesterday. Yes, I did. Maybe he didn't mean it. Maybe, but I was saving someone. That's the essence of our... You know what, I think... you know, we're trying to figure out what's the essence of you know, that causes the difference between different systems. I think that the system of America of if someone's trying to kill you, you do the same thing first, you preempt him. Israel lives like that. Israel has to live like that. And the rest of the world doesn't like it. The only way to deal with a terrorist is to terrorize him. But the rest of the world doesn't like to let people do that. Anyway, here's the point. Is that Moshe says, how do you talk to me this way? I'm trying to save the Jewish people. Why are you fighting each other? We should put our efforts at fighting this slavery, not each other. Right? But you say, but they tell him, you don't have the moral voice to tell us that, because you killed. You can't tell people not to hit if you once killed. Look, Moshe gets that later in the Torah, because when the Jews whore after the Midianites, who is Moshe sent to stop that? He doesn't do it himself. He sends Pinchas. Why? Why can't he tell them that you're whoring after the Midianites?
Because he's like a Midianite.
Because then Rashi writes this. Rashi says, Moshe lach Pinchas, because if he had done so himself, the people would have said, and Moshe, and Moshe, who was Matar you a Midianite? Even though by then the Gemara insists that he wasn't married to her. And who was Matar you a Midianite? Who marries a Midianite and tells us that we can't war after Midianites? Of course, there's this clear nafka mean between the two.
It's like a political. It's
like a political. You know what? Because politicians today are so good. It's hypocrisy and despicable. You think that someone who himself made a 6-month order against a Muslim ban or in his presidency would come to defend someone who's... And he was wrong. I think they're both wrong. But does anybody recall that there was a 6-month ban on Muslims to come to America with Obama's presidency? Right? You think that someone would come to at least defend and say, well, he's a little rough around the edges about how he did it, but please, I did the same. But the media lets it get away. Or Al Gore goes to Saudi Arabia and his speech says, he lied to us! He played to our fears! I mean, that's how he said it. About the Iraq war. When I can show you, Google right now, you'll have clips of Al Gore saying when he was vice president, Saddam Hussein has weapons of mass destruction. He's going to use them against us. He's going to use them against Israel. And we have to go in there and we have to uproot it, even if it means doing it in a war. Al Gore. So how do you go to the Arab world a few years later, when you're no longer vice president, and say that George Bush has lied to the American people about weapons of mass destruction to fight a war against Iraq? Shemsach. Right? Especially now with the internet. We can pick up everything you said. Who are you, Cory Booker, saying I'm ashamed of Jeff Sessions, when just a year ago he said, I have never been prouder to be a senator along with Jeff Sessions when they just had done something for civil rights together. Well, how is such hypocrisy? So what a beautiful lesson Moshe's teaching us. I have an answer. I was married before my Torah. They rejected it, or whatever it is. But Moshe says, no, if I was ever married to a Midianite, I can never be on the moral high ground to say that you shouldn't pour it on Midianites. Would I be against it if a Midianite joined our congregation and you married her? Of course not. But I know what people are going to say. Who was Mater your Midianite, Moshe? So I recuse myself on that case. It's a little refreshing, right? Hypocrisy is on both sides, but it's just. And again, that's reason number 171. Because they finally found someone as crude as he was, who just spoke his mind. Okay, that's really quite an amazing thing, right? Okay, but Moshe does rebuke a hitter, someone who hit, a day after killing. And that's part of why he didn't succeed in story number two. Alright? Remember at the time I said that these represent different types of leadership. Moshe's going to be second to none when it comes to saving the Jews, and when it comes to dealing with the outside world about how to do whatever needs to be done, whether it's about my nation or about the other nation. But he did not succeed fully about dealings with his own people. Right? They made him hit the rock, they Korach, and there's so many rebellions right away. Right? Maybe we can understand it. It's hot out there, and their minds were parched by the burning sun. If, you know, no matter what you see, you can see a sea split, but if you're not drinking for 3 days, who knows what you're going to say. Okay, but be that as it may, in this middle story, have you ever heard of a medrash about what Aaron would do if he found two people fighting? Okay, it's a medrash in Avot de Rabbi Natan.
But didn't he like tell the one person that he wanted to become?
Exactly. Yeah. He would go to each side and indicate to each side what the other sides feel. Now that's not quite a lie, because the other side doesn't feel. By the time they make up and they're friends again, even if they found out how they came to be friends, right, they may still let it slide. The Gemara says that Mutar L'Sham was Mipnei Shalom. You're allowed to change things around in the interests of peace. Shalom is a higher ideal than Emes. Right? So Aaron would play around with the truth to get these two guys to start fighting, to stop fighting, right? Moshe, no, it's not that way. Moshe's emes. Aaron will make an angle if he thinks it's something that's going to save us. Remember that Aaron saw them. They killed one man. They killed Hur, right? And then they said, okay, Hur, make us an angle. Hur refused, so they killed him. And they said, Aaron, make us an angle. And Aaron tried to stall until Moshe would come down, but Aaron didn't. Right? It says in Parshas Eked, God was angry with Aaron for that. But Moshe wondered, what did these people do to you, that you did this? Because you know they're a stiff-necked people, Moshe. Come on, cut me some slack here. All right, but Aaron is, Moshe would say, over my dead body. Right, Moshe they would have listened to, but when Hur said over my dead body, they didn't listen.
Who was Hur?
You see, Hur is an interesting character, because when Moshe, in this week's parsha, look carefully, come to shul in time and follow Lady in this week's parsha. When Moshe goes up to Shemayim in Perek Chaf Dalet of Shmos, he tells the people, if you have any issues in my absence that you would normally have taken to me, take them to Aharon and Hur. Pretty big. Hur's got to be a big guy then, right? Hur is the guy who's holding up Moshe's hands in Parshas Beshalach. Remember? When they're fighting the Amalekim? Right? Aharon on one side, Hur on the other side. So Aharon appears, Hur appears with Aharon, according to the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Hur was Miriam's husband. So it's a big team. Moshe, Aharon, Hur, Miriam, right? So he's one of these, along with Aharon, defeating Amalek, and he's along with Aharon as the two people in charge in my absence. What's the problem? That's the last time he's mentioned in Tanakh. Never again. We don't see it.
So the Midrash says that he was guilty.
So the Midrash says, how could someone in such a position to be mentioned alongside Aharon like that, and then never hear from him again? Shouldn't he have been like some kind of head of a tribe or something, or I don't know? Mention him, do something. He just disappears into the sunset after such a promising career, right? He's the first draft choice, and he doesn't ever play a game. It happens sometimes, by the way. Okay. So the answer is he didn't survive the game. So Aharon sees what they did to Hur and he's saying, okay, I have to make a quick decision. Do I make the Eidah? Or do I stand up to that? Alright, well, I'm not going to stand up to it, but I'll pause. I'll stop. Maybe by the time I finish with what I want to do, by that time Moshe will come down. Right? But that's, you see, Aharon can do that because he represents, I mean, what is, he becomes the Kohen. I mean, this is such a starker shayla. Meshech Chochma asks, before the Eidah, what was our priestly group? Bechor, right? It's not based on the drush, it's based on real sir. Alright? Bechorim were exchanged for the Levites, and it says in the Torah, because Levi did not worship the Eidah. Okay? The Eidah caused the Bechor to lose his position, right? Got it? And that position went to the Kohen. Right? So, what's the obvious kasha? So what do you do? You give the head of all of this tribe to serve me in my sanctuary? You give the head of the tribe, the one who made the Eidah? What kind of craziness is that? You know what I'm saying? Kohanim took the place of Bechorim because of the Eidah. Who becomes the Kohen? Gadol? The one who made the Eidah. He should have been disqualified forever. So what's going on? And this is where I'm going to say, we're going to continue next class with the Moshe Aharon contingent. How did they work together? Right? It's a necessary connection. Where one, I would submit to you, is the religious leader, and one is the spiritual leader. Try to figure which is which. Right? But here's what it is that Avraham, God purposely chose Aharon for this position because he made the cheshbon that it's better that I do this than they do to me when they do to Chum. Not just because I don't want to be dead by the Chum. Right? That could be true about anyone. We all like to be, we all prefer to be alive than dead. But some things are worth dying for. And I'm able to make this cheshbon that I'm going to give up something of myself for the sake of Bnei Israel. I'm going to bend over. I'm going to let this happen. Of course, it could be, I could be all wrong. It could be that the whole impetus of our doing this just wanted to live. Right? You got it? I just don't want to die. So what difference does it make? What my that's my main impetus. No. It's that Aaron, if that's what it was, then Aaron, you should have died like Hur. I'm making a claim to you that Aaron is purposely chosen to lead this new group called Kohanim, his own sons, Levi and Reuben, to serve with him, because of the way he went about the Eidah, trying to minimize the damage, hold out till Moshe comes down. If Moshe was really dead up there, what do you think would have happened?
Aaron would have taken over.
And they were probably, what is he thinking? They didn't worship the Eidah. The Eidah just represented the god for the Eidah Rav. How do I know it was the Eidah Rav who made the Eidah? Because when they made the Eidah, they said the following sentence. You'll recognize it. Eile Elohecha Yisrael Asher Ha'eluch HaMe'eretz Mitzrayim. This is the god, Israel, that took you out of Egypt. We went out with you because we it says we're not Eidah Rav Elohecha. Mixed multitude of Egyptians and foreigners went out with the Israelites. They didn't want to stay in Egypt. Right? And they said, we love your God, we love his instruction, we're following, and we keep Shabbos like you, we want to follow what you do. But one thing we cannot acknowledge is that you have, that your idea of God is just in your heads. You have to propose something, to make something, to look at something. Christianity. They have to have a body, they have to make something, make an angel of something. So that you can look at this thing and be reminded of your God. It wasn't hardcore, it's called shituf. Get it? Shituf means you make an idol and then you have a son, and the son represents the father, and together they're in creation. Right? They get it, but okay. So Aaron says, that's better than that they should kill me. And be totally without a leader, just in case Moshe really is dead. I mean, if Aaron was assured, Aaron, your brother's actually alive, he's coming down in 2 days. You're not going to be able to hold out. You either die or make that ego, which one are you going to do? He's going to die. And Moshe comes down and fixes this. So what's the question is, what if Moshe really is God? I mean, maybe that's why Rashi insists that what does it mean? Maybe you have a membership that says that Moshe is carried out, they saw Moshe on a bed, dead. Right? What is that membership? Because I don't believe any membership like that ever actually believes that that's what they saw. Yeah, it's Shabbat, but I'm sure if you go into the Chaim Rodin, they'll say, of course, that's what the Medrash says. Moshe's bed with a dead Moshe on it flew all around the people, and everyone saw a dead Moshe. No. First of all, what's the source of it? It's because it says, Zeh Moshe O'ish. Zeh means they're pointing at something. Right? As though they're seeing the dead Moshe. No. The dead Moshe on a bed is that what's going on in Aaron's mind, maybe in all of Israel's mind, is that he really isn't. Happened to him, it was 40 days, who knows? Maybe he tricked on the way down, and I don't know. He gave us the Torah, we're finished. Now, so maybe we need to have something to replace Moshe. That's what it was. The Eidah became Moshe. Until now, we had Moshe between ourselves and God. Now we have an Eidah. So when Moshe sees this, this is Meshech Chacham, all this is Meshech Chacham. He says, what can Moshe do to show B'nai Israel that nothing has physical inherent holiness? Not the Nile that they turned to blood, not the sun god Ra that they turned to darkness, not any other god of the Egyptians. Nothing has inherent holiness. The Bnei Yisrael made that mistake when they thought the Beis HaMikdash for them would be destroyed because it's God's house. Well, the sons of Eli made that mistake when they thought just taking the Aron to battle will save us. Right? You get it? You get it on that? Right? So what did Moshe do at this moment in history to show Bnei Yisrael that nothing in this universe has inherent holiness in it? If anything is holy, it's the human body, because we're created in God's image. So what can he do? What might be the holiest thing a human being ever touched? Look close, because it says God made it. What do we have that God made? That tree? You. Right? In other words, he's a luchos that I can say God himself, not allowing nature. God himself, it's like the Gan Eden. God, that tree is the descendant of something God made. Right?
It's other than Chava. These luchos God himself made. So let me, I'm going to smash them before their eyes to let them know even this is inherent in hope. Certainly not that they go carefully. Okay, you got it? I'm going to grind into dust and I'm not even going to let you keep any of it. Because that's what we do with a little jar. Okay? But our own fields, you know, God, Moshe, this is, you know, people stiff-necked. They wanted it, I bent over backwards. I was really afraid you were never going to come. That's what the Jewish means when it says that they saw him dead in the bed. Zazet, they were as sure as if they're pointing at him. Or at least they wanted to cover themselves as if though Moshe is never coming back. And if Moshe never comes back, right, what's better? Dead Aharon and let them do whatever they want? Or living Aharon and let's make an angel? Second. And that deserves to be called a problem. Because Aharon, as much as that harms you, it was the right choice. Assuming that you were worried, really worried that Moshe was going to come down. Because if you think that Moshe is coming down today, tomorrow, 2 days, a week from now, then maybe you should have gone the way of Chor. So
Chor would have thought that Moshe was coming down. Chor would have been
that choice.
Right. Aaron thought maybe he is, and Chor like knows that we know. And so people would be different choices.
Yeah. How can you be sure he's coming down? He's not here now. He said he'd be down by now. That's why Jews always come late. Because if Jews were always late then, they'd say, all right, he's late. He's always late.
Okay, so so let's establish that Aaron has a certain way of doing things that's different than Moshe. Moshe would never have said, maybe Aaron or you know, someone else is coming down. Moshe said, right this minute, it's the wrong thing to do. It's always going to be the wrong thing to do. It's sort of like Immanuel Kant's Mahavdil, categorical imperative. Are you familiar with what that means? The categorical imperative means, if this thing is wrong, it's always wrong. Make no exceptions.
Categorical
imperative means that this thing is always wrong. If this thing is wrong, it is always wrong. Immanuel Kant philosophically says you should rather die than lie. If someone comes to the door with a big meat cleaver in his hand, and he says, is Mara sitting in the room? And he goes, well, why do you want to know? Because I'm going to kill him. So, is he in the room? Right? So I'm not allowed to lie. Because if I lie to save your life, next time I lie to save money, next time I lie to save less, and before you know it, I'm lying about everything.
Doesn't the Torah have really say the language?
It's a manual Kant, categorical imperative. It comes to Allah to say, you can't live like that. Yes, it's a slippery slope. Maybe if you lie for this, maybe you'll lie for that. But I'm going to entrust this person that he's going to lie to save a life, and that doesn't mean he's going to lie to save a candy bar.
That's the Moshe way of thinking.
Moshe is going to teach us, right, that you know, Emes doesn't bend. Shalom bends. Aaron is Shalom. Yes, Emcha Shalom. He becomes the high priest to give us the brach of Shalom. Moshe is Emes. Emes can't bend. Once Emes bends, it's not Emes anymore. Right? So I'm not saying that Moshe had a categorical imperative. We'll see that Moshe knows how to be flexible as well in certain instances. For now, I've hopefully have established for you the essence of Moshe, the essence of Aaron, and one without the other would not have been a full leadership for the Jewish people. Maybe it's coming out at the burning bush. If Moshe, you know what? You can't do this yourself, you're right. It's not that I'm learning something new about you, I know you are. But I need you to express it. I need you to feel it. You're not the full, complete Jewish leader alone. You need a help. And what the two of you represent.
Now, I'm going to present this to you at the next class through, I'm going to do it through Shabbos. What do I mean? Torah says Zachor and it says Shamor. Sometimes the Torah calls Shabbos male, and sometimes it calls Shabbos female. Sound familiar, right? Mechalalecha, mos you must. If you violate her, you will die. Kol shomer Shabbos mechalalo. All people who observe Shabbos from violating him. Now Shabbos is not a male or female, it's an it. But why does the Torah sometimes refer to Shabbos masculine and sometimes refer to Shabbos feminine? Both of them. So, obviously Moshe and I are both males, but there are two models of how we relate to Hashem. I'm going to call one a mathematical model, and I know I can get into trouble. This would be reason number 482. If I say that the mathematical model is the male and the aesthetic model is the female, you would get fired tomorrow if you just said that. One of the presidents had to actually resign because in a lecture where he was trying to get more women to sign up for science courses, he dared even say that science seems to appeal more to men. And the woman in the audience had. I couldn't breathe anymore. I had to leave the room. Perhaps proving the point. But anyway, so the point is that when that Rav Soloveitchik has spoken about this quite extensively, and I made reference to his name in the beginning of the shiur, just to now I'm catching up with it, is that there are different models within Judaism for a mathematical model and an aesthetic model. The mathematical model is interested with details. The aesthetic model is interested with how you feel. Right? So which one is the religious leader, which one is the spiritual leader? You know, these, when I came to show you, I had a sign on the top that says Rabbi. So I said, spiritual leader. I said, I'm not a spiritual leader. Just Rabbi, it's good. It's a spiritual leader. And you're giving it away? Who's the religious leader, who's the spiritual leader? It's Moshe and Aaron. Aaron is dressed up with this very fancy Kohen Gadol garb, and he's busy with pomp and ceremony in public, and he's man, Yom Kippur, it's a big event, and everyone is
religious.
Yeah,
that's the aesthetic one. That's the spirit.
Religious aesthetic.
How does it affect your spirit? What are you feeling on Yom Kippur? What are you feeling? How is it?
That's spiritual.
That's spiritual. The religious leader is Moshe, who deals with emes. Just the facts. Is this matzah big enough to be yotzei? Is there enough morrow here? Am I? You know, the spiritual person on Shabbos wants to know how am I seeing kiddush? I'm wearing beautiful clothes, out of fine wine, right? The mathematical model is: am I eating the watermelon properly? Am I doing boer by you know? Right? Many people ask the religious one. How does it enhance your Shabbos that you can more on this way instead of that? The religious one deals with minutia. The spiritual one gets all the fun. He gets to wear the fancy clothes and the kongo. Right? You following? We'll start to elaborate very much on all these. We'll see it appearing on. And you know what? I said about Yom Kippur 2, in Parshas Achrayimos, it says Yom HaKippurim Hu, and in Parshas Emor, Yom HaKippurim He. Make up your mind. Is Yom Kippur a boy or a girl? Right? The answer is both. Okay, today's class was brought to you by a lot of syntactical work because there's a lot of parshanut involved. Syntax is parshanut. All right? Okay, we'll get back to Shema on Thursday.